Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and today I'm joined once again by I think the person that covers the Leafs, maybe the best, and there's a lot of writers out there, the one and only Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Thanks so much for taking the time and doing this third time on the show. So we really
No.
appreciate you coming on and talking some Leafs. And there's never it's never boring in Leafs land for you, Luke.
Well, it's always dramatic, right? And if it's not dramatic, then we'll make it dramatic. But yeah, happy to be on with you. Third time, yeah.
Yeah,
Good
I
to see you,
know.
Alex.
It goes by quick. It goes by quick. And I guess that's almost like the Leafs in the playoffs. And what's it like for you? Do you just have the same headline every year for another first round exit or another woeful playoff struggle to begin? Like, do you just write the same thing each time, or how do you do it, Luke?
Yeah, me and my peers were kind of joking, right? Like all we have to do is copy and paste and maybe tweak a few words here and there because it has been the same old story for a lot of the time. I mean, last year they did win a round and that was huge. But then it felt so anticlimactic because they were never really in the Panthers series in round two. But I do feel like I'm harping on the same themes a lot. I haven't agreed with their roster construction plan for a while. I was intrigued by it at the beginning. It was like, okay, this kid Kyle Dubas has a vision. I almost feel like he was trying to get ahead of the way hockey was and was trying to, jump and see like, well, in the future it's going to be more possession based and the team with the most skill is going to win. But we see come playoff time and time again, there's a certain way you have to play. And, the Leafs kind of got to it actually a little bit in games 5 and 6 against the Boston Bruins, played two of the best defensive games I've seen. But there's just not enough there. It's a full team sport. Doesn't matter how good the top end of your lineup is, you need everyone. And they just haven't left enough dollars in my mind to fill out the bottom six to build a decor that can really contend for a championship. And then they're always pinching pennies on their goalie. It's like, oh, who's available? Matt Murray? Oh, Samsonov? He's good value, sure. But did the guys in front of him ever believe that this is a guy that's going to backstop us to a Stanley Cup? So I feel like management's finally come around to that and is open to change. And they got a new coach in, and we'll see what they do with the roster. I think that's what everyone in Leafland is curious about.
I just maybe go to the coach, and obviously it's pretty raw, pretty new that they got their man Craig Berube. It seemed as though he was destined to Toronto as soon as they lost in the first round. It's quite imminent. You wrote about him, and I thought that you started your piece quite interesting. The walk back era is over. The accountability era is here. Just maybe talk about what you think Berube brings to this Leafs team that has really struggled in the playoffs, as we mentioned.
Well, I think he wants to institute a different style of play. He was speaking to the media for the first time on Tuesday and said, we want to go north. We want to win every puck battle, but we don't want to get outworked ever. And I think Sheldon Keefe did a fine job coaching. I think he should be a better coach in his second opportunity. But Keefe really prioritized possession. And even if that meant passing back, or passing east-west, he tried to generate offense that way. I think Berube wants to have them play a different style, almost the same style that we see having success in the playoffs. He wants them to play that 82 games a year, a more consistent, dependable style. I think he's going to have a say in how the roster is constructed. The Stanley Cup winning team he had in 2019 with the Blues, they had an awesome decor. Right, they had a great goalie, the hottest goalie of the moment, and Jordan Binnington. So I think he's going to be part of those decisions. Ultimately, those are Trey Living's decisions, but he's going to say, "Give me a goalie." He's going to say, "I don't like a decor that's soft. I like a strong decor." And I'm sure he would love them to re-sign Joel Edmondson, for example. So I think we're going to see the style of play be a little bit different, and then in terms of walking back comments, Sheldon Keefe That was highlighted a couple times when he criticized the high-end guys. I don't think Craig Berube is going to be out there throwing guys by name under the bus or anything, but I think he is going to call it like he sees it. And if someone's not playing well, he's going to have the presence and the authority and the experience to say, "You're going down to the fourth line, or you're sitting on the bench," or he'll say, "Our guys didn't play well," and he won't walk it back the next day. He's a commanding presence. He's going to be a different guy for people like us in the media to deal with, because I think he's a little bit less chatty, explains, tips his hand a little bit less, explains less of the thought process that goes into things. He's kind of just more straight and to the point. I think just the fact that they're changing coaches is going to put a lot of the players on notice and maybe shake them out of their comfort zone, because anytime a new coach comes in, you have to reprove yourself to someone. It's like, say you changed jobs or your boss got fired and you got a new boss. All of a sudden you feel like, oh, all that goodwill I had built up with my previous boss, I got to reprove myself. And honestly, I think that's probably a good thing for a Leafs team that's probably a little too comfortable.
Yeah, maybe talking about their comfortability, especially just the core four and the young guys. How much has maybe their struggles in the playoffs been because of that lack of accountability and really feeling comfortable in their positions rather than maybe being a bit, put more on edge and a bit more of a maybe lacking of that forceful voice from their coach? How much do you think that maybe impacted them in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, something like that's really hard to quantify exactly how much that impacts them. I mean, I think the number one thing is roster construction. Like, I just don't think they have enough guys farther down the lineup. And when you put so much emphasis on those four or five players, I core four rhymes, so it sounds better, but I like to include Morgan Rielly just because he's been there forever. And all five guys, they're main asset. I mean, Auston Matthews, Selke finalist, right? But Mitch Marner, defensively responsible. But their main asset is scoring. And the great irony is that come playoff times, they haven't been able to get to three. It's like two goals or less every game. So you built this team, built a score, and then they can't do it. So part of that, I think they have to find it within themselves to push through. Two coaches have tried. Now they're on to a third to try and get them over the hump. We'll see where that goes. But I think the main issue to me is finding better defensemen. They got no offense from their defense. They got better at defending in zone. Like, they didn't allow Boston a ton of grade A chances in that series. But you look at the good teams that have gone deep in the playoffs, and they have defensemen that can drive play. Toronto hasn't really had that, and they didn't have it in the regular season either.
I guess with that, they always say top four defensemen don't grow on trees. How does Brad Treliving address the blue line? I know you've written about the UFA market, and I know you said that it's not maybe doesn't have that high end defenseman out there, but there is a lot of depth. Do you think that's where the Leafs try to address maybe their blue line in the offseason?
Yeah, well, they only have a couple guys actually signed. Jake McCabe has one more year on his deal. Riley's locked in for many more years. But outside of that, they have some flexibility. So I'm sure they'll talk to Lyubushkin and Edmondson about coming back. Giordano's probably going to retire. TJ Brody's not coming back. So there's going to be, just by that process, there's going to be some turnover. They have a really interesting decision to make with Timothy Liljegren. And I feel like he's trending towards Rasmus Sandin territory, where you want to be able to say you drafted and developed a guy that is an everyday NHLer. But once again, he got a healthy scratch for a game in the playoffs. And it's like, at this point, where are you at with this guy? Is there a way to upgrade him? Do you still believe that he has a higher ceiling? So there's a decision there. He's a RFA. So yeah, I expect him to poke around in free agency. We know Trey Living loves Chris Tanev. Does Tanev love being in Dallas so much that he just re-signs, or does he hit the market? They're going to have eyes for Chris Tanev. They're going to have eyes for Brett Pesce, who's probably not coming back to Carolina. Brandon Montour is a big name. Forsling got the bag in Florida over before Montour did. So it wouldn't surprise me if Montour hit the open market. So there are guys for sure that the Leafs can target in free agency. I also think they're going to explore a trade. I don't think it's crazy to think that they're going to have a serious conversation with Mitch Marner about maybe waiving his no move because they don't want to give him 13, 12, 5, 13 the following year. So if they're not going to re-sign him, do you explore a trade? To me, the biggest possible name might be Seth Jones because he's a right shot, because he's a big body. Trey Living likes big guys. He can drive play. Like I was saying, how they don't get a lot of offense from the back end. I think Seth Jones would fit in really nice as a Toronto Maple Leaf. Again, I think he has some trade protection, so that's a big decision for Chicago to make. And the Leafs could regret it if they see Marner and Connor Bedard dazzling and turning into a highlight show. But these are the conversations I think you have to have. They're not all going to come true, but these are the types of options that could be available.
I mean, I know you're so plugged in, but just if you had to, place a bet or like, how likely is it that Mitch Marner is a Toronto Maple Leaf to start training camp in September?
I want to say 50-50.
Okay.
And even if he starts, I don't think that necessarily means they couldn't pursue something by the trade deadline. But the sense he holds all the cards, right? So if he and his agent, Darren Ferris, who has a history of taking his clients, walking them out the door, so they have to work with the Leafs here. It's easy for me to come on your podcast and talk about this. It's much harder to pull off a deal of that magnitude in reality. And the other thing is you're probably going to lose the trade on paper, but you're going to free up money and you're going to change your team after years and years of showing that this approach just doesn't work. So do you get ahead of it or do you say, hey, Mitch Marner's fine value. He's nearly a 100-point guy. We'll take our chances. I think it's worth exploring it. And certainly in the fan base, there's an appetite that just changing the coach isn't enough. Brendan Shanahan said something interesting at the season ender. He said, this team is going to look different and be more prepared for the playoffs. And he said, it might not be by training camp, but it might be by the deadline. So that made me wonder, hey, is if they don't find the right deal, does this even drag into the season?
Is that something with Marner and just this cap hit? But what that like how feasible is it that you can make that trade in season, just with the salary cap? Like that's my kind of question to you.
Well, it's not easy, but there's teams with the cap going up that need to get to the floor. He's good. Him and Tavares are going to get big signing bonuses. So in actual dollars, like teams looking to save money, he'll be fine value. But really what you want to do is put him with a team. That's why I mentioned Chicago because they have cap space. Utah is another possibility. I've wondered about Nashville. Teams that need more offense, teams that have cap room. But again, he has to agree to this, right? Columbus has had eyes for Marner. They were considering giving him an offer sheet way back when he was an RFA, and they need scoring big time, and they need star power. They need to, engage their market. So there's places that would want him for sure, but the trick is he has to. Because he holds the final say, he has to agree that he wants to go to one of these places.
What do you do if you're Brad Sherlovin and Mitch Marner says, I have a no trade clause. I don't want to stay. I want to be a Toronto Maple Leaf forever. How likely is there a world where he gets extended this offseason, or is it as simple as does he just get or walk to free agency?
I don't see him getting extended. Because he's going to want Nylander's money, bare minimum. So yeah, Tavares is going to come off the books, but then you're just doing the same thing. You're going to have three of the top whatever half dozen cap hits because Matthews' raise kicks in, Nylander's raise kicks in. Marner's not going to take a discount. He's going to want at least what Nylander makes. He's going to say, yeah, maybe he had more points than me this season, but I kill penalties. I'm more defensively responsible. I'm not hanging around center ice looking for breakaways. Like he's gonna have a case to make just as much as him. And I do believe that the organization is kind of like, we're done pouring all this money into forwards. And that doesn't mean, some people get it twisted and think, oh, you don't think Mitch Marner is a good player, or you don't think he can help the Leafs. That's not true. It's just if you want to build a team that wins a championship, you need to allot those dollars to a better goalie, to a better defense core. That would be my argument. To a better bottom six, spread it out. They always are trying to pinch pennies. Oh, who can we get for less than $1 million? Oh, well, and then he ends up being a healthy scratch, or he's in and out of the lineup, and it's like, well, you kind of get what you pay for. The other risk of pouring all that money is one of them gets hurt, the way Austin did, or Willie with his migraines to start the playoff series, and then you're down a guy. You're also putting too many eggs in one basket, so that at one injury, and you're screwed. You can't, weather the storm.
With that, just like I know it's been a year since Dubas left, but what do you make of his tenure with the Leafs now that we're maybe a year out and it seems as though his big bet failed, but also the team doesn't seem any bit closer to winning a cup than in a sense when he took charge.
Well, I think it's hard not to look at the man who hired him and right and chose a young, inexperienced GM with a lot of interesting ideas, for sure. Smart guy, right? But that was a gamble on Brendan Shanahan's part. He could have stuck with Lamoriello. He could have went with Mark Hunter. Instead, he was intrigued by Dubas's new ideas, and he did show a lot of creativity. He made a lot of nice individual moves in terms of plucking out guys with good value. I think of the Michael Bunting contract in free agency, which was a home run, right? They got 2 years out of him, far exceeded his cap hit. First line guy, those were probably the best years. Maybe you make a case for the early years with Hyman, but that was the best left wing fit for Matthews and Marner was Bunting. They were like a dominant line. So he had some home runs individually, but when you step back, did he build a real team that can win a championship? No. And I really think he dropped the ball with goalies. I think he took some bad gambles. The Matt Murray one just blew my mind. Like, yeah, he got blinded by some loyalties too to the Sioux, I think.
I think
Yeah.
how many players did he have from the Sioux in his tenure? Like 5 to 8 players that he,
Probably. Yeah. I mean,
something.
Connor Timmins is still kicking around Toronto, and yeah, there's a bunch. Yeah.
I guess with that too, you talk about maybe failing in the goaltending department, but I was thinking about this a little bit. It feels as though he also failed a lot in terms of and this team, you can see it this year, especially just on the defense, right? Like outside of Morgan Rielly, he's never really added that high-end defenseman outside of maybe Jake Muzzin in his prime. You look at all those teams that win the cups and you look at their blue line, look at Vegas, look at St. Louis with Craig Berube in 2019. This Leafs core decor feels miles away in a sense to that team. How close is this team, but also that decor, to becoming a real like high level, high end defensive core? Like how much do they need to add?
Well, not close. Yeah, lots. Three guys, four guys. I don't know. I agree. You know what? They had a lot this year and last year at the deadline. They had a lot of depth, but they had a lot of third pairing guys. They had a lot of guys that were NHL level, but they weren't difference makers for you. They weren't go-to guys. They eat a ton of minutes. I think a TJ Brody, he actually had a lot of good years for the Leafs. I think that was a nice free agent signing. I think Muzzin was pretty much a home run and got undone by health issues. But TJ Brody was second in average ice time on the Leafs, and he wasn't even good enough to play in the playoffs when it mattered. And that I think that tells you pretty much all you need to know about the strength of the high end. I'll give Dubas credit for the Jake McCabe pickup, especially at half salary retained. He's been good value. He was better this year than he was last year. One of the failings of the team is their inability to draft and develop and have another wave of young defensemen coming. Because we were talking so much about, it's hard not to view or grade a team when you don't factor in the salary cap and you don't have those guys on entry-level deals or cheap bridge deals contributing. You know, they tried to make it work with Rasmus Sandin. They tried with Timothy Liljegren. But you look around the league and they don't have that guy that's in your top four that's still a second or third year player and is contributing. I mean, you know, you got Sanderson, right? Like
Yeah, and Otto.
there's guys that are there, yeah, that, you know, they just step in and can play, or maybe it takes them a couple of years, but they're still relatively cheap. They're still playing above their salary. The Leafs that never really had any of that for the last, what, 10 years? I don't know. It's been a while.
Yeah. It just, having our conversation for 20 or odd minutes, it feels like a lot of negativity. It feels as though this falling. And maybe Luke, let's give some optimism. Just how where does this team find itself in terms of its contention window in your mind? Because they still have Austin Matthews, who could arguably be the best player in the league at some times. Are they still in that window to be a contender in the next 3, 4 years in your mind?
Sure. You know, change can happen fast. I mean, right now I'm in New York City. Remember when the Rangers sent out the letter and said, okay, we're going to take a step back, and they rebuilt pretty quickly. They made some tweaks. They kept some guys they identified as core pieces, and they made some tweaks around it, and we're fine. I think the positive is the organization feels like it's ready to make some harder decisions than they have in the past. They For the first time forever, they're not like, let's just run it back. So absolutely, they have the best goal scorer in the game. He almost got 70 goals. Like, Austin in his prime is more dangerous than Ovechkin in his prime as a goal scorer. So he's and you have him locked up for the next few years. You have Nylander, who's a game breaker, and who's built to withstand the spotlight. Nothing bothers this kid. He's in his prime. So absolutely, there's building blocks there. You know, some nice develop, you know, lower level development stories are Simon Benoit, who got a contract. Bobby McMahon is looking like a real player that can help on the fringes of this team. Matthew Nyes, I think, is a good story. So absolutely, there's some positives. McCabe, as I mentioned, is a bargain, and he's, you know, established himself as a top four guy. And he's under contract for dirt cheap because of the salary retention. So there are positives. There are a lot of things worth building around here. But you need a goalie, and you need to make some smart moves to fill out that decor, as we talked about.
And just on the goaltending part, like to be glass half full, Joseph Woll has been really good. Just he doesn't play enough, of course, and got injured in the playoffs too after that game 6 on the last play of the game, which is just so tough. What kind of goalie do you think they add? Is it bargain bin type, like a Laurent Boissois, who I know well in Winnipeg, wouldn't cost you too much, but hasn't really played more than 30, 40 games a season. Do they go after a Saros or a Markstrom? What do you think they do in net in the offseason?
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I don't really know what they're going to do. I would like to think they've reached the point where they want to go big game hunting. And you make a good point. When you look at the free agent market, the only guys with, I think, 20 wins are Samsonov, who they're not going to bring back. And it was quite erratic. As much as I love interviewing the guy, I think he's a great character, and I really hope that he gets a good contract and has success. But I also believe Toronto's had enough with the roller coaster that is Ilya Samsonov. And then Cam Talbot, who's just getting quite old and basically was not good enough to carry the Kings. So I don't think they're going to go down that road. And then you get into guys like Brossoit, like, you know, guys that probably aren't going to start 40 games for you. They're number two guys. So I, price matters, right? The price of the trade. But I do think they've reached the point where they should go big game hunting for goalies. So Saros, Markstrom, Allmark, he's not coming back to Boston because they're going to have to give Swayman a giant raise. Those are probably the three names that we'll hear on the goalie trade market this summer.
How much do you think that maybe their first round pick will be in play in terms of trying to add either to their defense or at the goaltending position?
Yeah, that's a good question because it really wasn't in play, I felt, at the trade deadline. And now, was that because Trey Living didn't believe they were just one rental away from winning a Stanley Cup? Did he see the team for what it was? Probably, middle of the pack in terms of the playoff teams. Or does he really want to stock the cupboards? My guess is that for the right trade, it will be in play, especially because it's a late first rounder. I'm no draft expert, but when you talk to people who know the prospect pool better than I do, they say that really you're probably not going to hit a home run late in the first round. There's the top heavy guys, but where the Leafs are picking, it may not be a difference maker. So, as we talked about, their window for contention is basically Auston Matthews' contract. Why not put it in play if it can get you someone that can help now?
They also Brad Tre Living last summer, added some pretty interesting names. I remember seeing the Tyler Bertuzzi signing and being like, "What the heck just happened? This is crazy." Where do you think the Leafs will do? Just maybe to their forward depth, as you mentioned, it seems as though Max Domi's probably coming back. Bertuzzi maybe not. Is that where Tre Living and maybe Craig Berube as well will try to keep adding to maybe the snot that they tried to add in the offseason and seem to work out in many ways during their playoff run, even though it was unsuccessful?
Yeah. I think Domi and Bertuzzi both had good playoffs. I think the other guys like Edmondson and Lyubushkin had pretty good playoffs too. Like, I don't think those, second tier guys hurt them at all. I do think they take a serious run at re-signing Max. He's been on 1 year deals last little bit, so I'm curious how much he demands term. And with that term, how far Toronto is willing to go. Bertuzzi, I see as a much longer shot to return, although I liked his season, how it started off looking like a disaster and he just got better and better and better. And come playoff time, I thought he was a real agitator, went to the net, kind of took care of Marchand for a lot of time, like often in entertaining ways. So I just think he didn't want to take a 1 year deal last time, and I think somewhat because what he brings is so coveted on the market, I think he's probably going to land elsewhere. So yeah, then I think maybe they want to find multiple guys in terms of that they had a horrible penalty kill, so they tried to address that by getting Connor Dewar, but I think they need more. I think they need a center that can play in your middle six. And I also think they need some defensively minded forwards that can help kill penalties because their penalty kill was a real sore point, and it was all year long, not just in the playoffs. So that's probably an area they address. Guys like I think of Jordan Martinook coming out of Carolina, his game lends well to the playoffs, has some edge, has some experience, but probably isn't going to command a ton of money, right? When you look at his stat line, so probably some names like that.
Is that where even regardless of the Marner situation, if he stays or goes, but maybe just I know you've talked about that this team really needs a third line center.
Yeah.
Is that a place do you think they try to add via trade, maybe even to or in free agency?
Yeah, for sure. Their problem is Trey Living gave David Camp 3C money when really he's a 4C, and he's fine as a fourth line center. I don't like him as your third line center. I think they need someone better up there, someone that can add a little bit of offense. Like David Camp, just that's not his game, so I think an area they absolutely have to address. And that's even if they bring back Domi, because I liked how, his speed at center, but I don't think he's a true 3C. I like having him as a utility guy where someone gets injured, he can play center for a bit, but otherwise maybe he's up facilitating Matthews as a winger, because he's an excellent passer. So I think absolutely they need to address a middle six center for sure.
Yeah, no, and speaking about centers, I know you've written that it seems unlikely that John Tavares is traded this offseason. It sounds like he'll stay in Toronto. Obviously, he loves being a Toronto Maple Leaf. He has a no trade clause as well. He's had a lot of vitriol from the fan base in the past couple of years just because of that big price tag that he's being paid. And obviously, he's not an $11 million guy at this point in his career, but where do you see him right now fitting this to into this team heading into next season? And is it likely that he'll still be with the Leafs this year and maybe even sign an extension for a much re reduced rate as well?
I don't see him signing an extension. Definitely, I'd be shocked if it happened before next off season. I don't think they're in any rush to commit to him, even if it's at a reduced rate. And well, it's going to be at a reduced rate from 11 million. And the criticism is a little bit unfair, because I think when they first signed him, I think Dubas thought this team was ready to win a Stanley Cup in the first half of the Tavares contract. And yeah, he's going to get older, as all players do, but it won't matter, because by that time we will have won. So who cares about the last years? Well, that success never happened. So now it's like, oh, we're paying 11 million bucks for this guy, and we haven't really made any significant strides in the playoffs. So he probably gets an unfair bad rap. But he has he and these things are frustrating, I think, for fans, but the player has every right to negotiate the no move clause. I think the onus falls on management to just play hardball and say, no, you don't have full no move if it's that important, and call their bluff maybe. Because I would never blame a player for getting more money or getting more protection. Like, so he's earned that. He's had him and his wife have had three kids since he signed in Toronto. He's got a young family, lives right in the city, has support of their grandparents, and he has a pretty good setup. And the spotlight doesn't faze him. He doesn't mind doing interviews. He's kind of unrattled. Like, the people joke about the hockey robot stuff, but he almost is. Like, it's kind of crazy. So I don't think it would bother him to play out the last year, and I don't think he's that eager to move. Now, how on the, I guess the question becomes how, and the same applies to Marner, is how uncomfortable do they make it for these guys? Do they want to make things uncomfortable so that they want to waive it? That I don't know. But with Tavares, I think he pretty much just rides this out, and they kick the can down the road and say, let's deal with it after this season's over.
And it's going to be a fascinating off season. I guess you wrote in your 57 thoughts column just about will this team be a 100-point team next year? And they've gone down in the standings each of the last 3 years. What are the expectations in your mind? I know a lot can change between now and even maybe July 1st with the makeup of this team, but what do you think the realistic expectations are for the Leafs heading into next season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really hot, tough to judge, because we don't know the roster yet. And I'm anticipating a lot of changes on the trade market and in free agency. But I would say that you don't want to take another step back. You don't want to be a wild card team. You don't want third in the Atlantic would be the absolute lowest you'd want to go. I mean, why not win the division for once and give yourself an easier first round matchup? I mean, that would be the ideal. Easier said than done. But I am worried that, that they are on the decline, and that we might look back and say, you know what? Their best year to win a cup might have been 21 when they drew the Montreal Canadiens in the North Division, because it seems to be getting harder and harder. So they're still, like we said, there's ways to turn this around, but I don't like how it's trending. And part of that is because the other teams are getting better. Like Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo, they were in the down cycle where they were like, hey, we're not ready to compete yet. That's over. They're all like, we got to make playoffs next year. All three of those teams. So if each one of them steals a few more points in the division, the top half of the division could come down a bit. Tampa's not ready to wave the white flag. They just traded for Ryan McDonagh. So it's like every team, what team is actually thinking it's going to rebuild next year in the Atlantic?
None.
None, right? Boston will probably go out and get a center. So it's going to be tough for them to maintain a 100-point pace, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating Atlantic division next year and a fascinating Leaf season. So I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this, Luke. I know you're covering the Panthers and the Rangers series now in New York. I know that you've been very good at predictions in the playoffs as
Huh.
well. I think you're 10 for 12,
That's correct. Yeah.
I'm not mistaken. One of the one wrong ones are the Jets, I think, which is hurts
Yes.
my
Yeah.
soul as a Jets fan. But just maybe what do you think of the quickly just on the Panthers Rangers series because you're covering it? Do you have a favorite and maybe give us more of your Nostradamus powers and maybe predict the cup final as well?
Sure. Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, Madison Square Garden is my favorite rink to watch a hockey game. So I feel pretty blessed, that I get to do this for a living. I also think both these teams are so physical, and they're both not neither one of them fluked their way here, right? They're two legit powers that have kind of been building towards this for a while. So I think it's going to be a heck of a series. The more it's played on special teams, the more it favors the Rangers. They out in the East, among all Eastern playoff teams, they have the best PK and the best power play. Florida's better 5-on-5. So if they tuck the whistles, it favors the Panthers. But I think we're in for a 7-gamer. I have Florida winning it. I have Dallas beating Edmonton, and I have Dallas winning the cup. I picked Dallas way back in October, so I can't change
Wow.
my vote now. Yeah.
Wow. So
I just
you're,
think they're the deepest. They're the deepest.
yeah, they're a wagon. They're an absolute
Yeah.
wagon. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy MSG tonight. It will be a fun one. And I think thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I think every year I come to you and I ask, or I say, I hope that one year you can cover the Leafs and maybe a conference finals one day. So I'm hoping, I know I cover the Sens and this is probably, will get me crushed by the Sens fan base. But I do hope one day, Luke, that you can be in an Eastern Conference Finals and it's at to Scotiabank Place in Toronto and it's maybe a bit more fun. And you don't have to write the same storyline every year after the first round. But thanks so much for doing this, Luke, and enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
All right, thanks for having me, Alex.